to make sure it's at your attention is the Yerushalmi. So you guys saw the Yerushalmi because we spoke about yesterday a little bit about trying to nail down even further the scope of Kelim Bnei Yisrael HaAvadim, whether it's an Isser or whether it's some type of a reflection of the pole boss relationship. It isn't necessarily a prohibition, who you're talking to, all those questions. So an important marker for this is the Yerushalmi, which I think has been on our list from the beginning, which has Machlokas Rabin Rav Yochanan about the gather of this whole din. And that according to Rav Yochanan, how is his version a little bit different than we have it? It says, because of Libanei Yisrael Avadim, it quotes the Pasuk, so therefore either party can be chozer. The balabas or the worker can be chozer right away. Can be chozer in the middle of the day. And the other opinion, it's Rav's opinion, is that no, that's only a zchus of the poel. The poel has the right to be chozer. So the nesivus, I think was also on the list, if you had a chance to see this, in Shin Lamed Gimel. So the nesivus discusses how it seems to be there is a fundamental machlokus over there in terms of what the impact of Kelim Bnei Yisrael HaAvadim is. That maybe according to Rav Yochanan, who says it could be chozer in either direction, he's saying that there is no avdus kinyan that exists for a poel. That's the impact of the pasuk. And it applies in both directions. That the baal habayis can be chozer, and the poel can be chozer because there has to be a constant ability to undo this because we can't have any type of a shibud connecting two people in an avdus-like relationship. While the other opinion, it says it's just about the poel. So the Nesivus has a fascinating way of seeing that, which is a little bit difficult to put it together with the Bavli, as later Sarvam pointed out. But the Nesivus says, if you say that it's just the poel who can back out, so then what you're essentially saying is that the poel basically is like an Eved, but an Eved also sometimes can redeem himself. Therefore, a poel has the same possibility. Essentially a kal v'chomer. Now, whose view would that parallel? Anyone recall from last week, we discussed a view that says that essentially the poel is treated like an Eved and just a little bit better, kal v'chomer. Right? It basically follows the view of the Shuvas Maimoni, which Lixos quoted and others, that the reason the poel can get out is because the Eved also theoretically can get out. Now we have a concept called Giron Kesef, that the Eved can buy himself out of the deal. So too, the worker has to have at least the same possibility. So in essence, the way that Shuvas Maimon is understanding it is that the poel gets out by buying himself out. So because he probably hasn't been paid yet under normal circumstances, he'll forfeit his future wages, and that will be ki'ilu he's buying himself out. Remember, we talked about this a little bit. So that's an interesting spin that Nesivus has on the whole thing. The problem is, which view does the Bavli agree with? Between those two opinions in the Yerushalmi, which view does the Bavli agree with? The second view, right? Because the first view, that it goes both ways, the Baal HaBas or the poel could be chozer. So we paskin, poel is the one who can be chozer in the Bavli. So then to say, okay, that's how the Bavli understands it, like it's basically an Eved kind of relationship, as later Sfarim point out, that's not necessarily going to fit. Because we mentioned that we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, and again, it's something we discussed, that there's a sheet that is paskin in Shulchan Aruch that shows that we're not following the Hagos Maimonides view. What was that? It was the Maharik. Right? The Maharik, which the Shulchan Aruch quotes, says the worker can pull out even if he's been paid the whole salary in advance and he doesn't have it to give back. So even under those circumstances where he's not redeeming himself in any way, he still has this curse. So it's a little bit difficult to really try to match the Bavli and Yerushalmi especially with the Nesivus and spin on the Yerushalmi. But the Yerushalmi is definitely a Mar Malkum you want to be aware of, because again, in terms of trying to understand what's the impact of this Pasuk, we're going to read in the Parsha pretty soon, what's the impact of this Pasuk, Kiliban Yisrael Avadim, so this is an important marker in that whole discussion, which we advanced a little bit yesterday. Jonathan?
According to the Maharik, doesn't he say that even if you pull out that when you're prepaid, you still have a chov?
Correct.
You have to work. So even if you have nothing, so is the implication of that that you have to sell yourself to be an Evet to him?
I mean, that's how you'll care. That's how you'll take care of the chov? No, I don't think that's what he means.
He says you have nothing left, though, even.
Right, so you'll eventually have to get a job, and you'll have to...
So you'll
you will have a debt, right. You're clearly not able to do it now, but you will have a responsibility to ultimately take care of it. Otherwise, it would be pointless. Right, so it means even though you can't pay it now, you still have the right to get out. Okay, so that's just, again, one Mar Malkum and one discussion it's definitely kedai to be aware of. So let's also talk about a few other details in this whole question, which, again, I think each detail that we add fleshes the picture out a little bit more. So you recall what we discussed also last week, a couple of scenarios where it sounds like this, maybe from the Bach already and from later's farm, that what if the Eved wants to, the non-Eved, the Poel, wants to back out, but not because he wants to be free. He wants to back out so that he can work for someone else, right? Remember we talked about that? The Chachma Shlomo said that he can't back out if he's going to end up working for another boss in the same way, because Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim means he has the right to be free, not that he has the right to work for someone else in the same way. And we discussed that a semi-support, but not absolute proof of this, was what it says in the Torah, that, as the Bach explains it, that he can't negotiate for a higher salary this way. He can either quit or work at the same salary. But he can't tell his boss that, oh, since I could quit, therefore you want to keep me, you have to pay me more. Because it's about his having a right to his freedom, but not about him having a permanent advantage in all circumstances. So what would you say about the following? What if you happen to have hired this guy to do two things? And he decides he wants to pull out from one of them, but he's still going to be working for you for the other thing. So does he have the same right to be chozer? What do you think? Seems to be a related question, right? Fine?
Yeah, the whole point about this is doing something that you wouldn't want to do. So if he wants to not do one of the jobs, he can pull out. That's like the...
Oh, so you're saying, again, that's a different kind of spin on it. You're saying that avdus, non-avdus means having the freedom to select the kind of job you want to do.
Right.
Which is not the only way to see it. You could also see it that if you want to follow that logic, so maybe we should say also he should be able to switch bosses too, which the Chachma Shlomo, not uncontroversially, but the Chachma Shlomo thought that wasn't the case. Right. Well, maybe not, and maybe anyway, as we all know, who the boss is makes a big difference also. Right, the Gemara says that. We saw at the beginning of the parak, we started talking at the beginning of the semester, that that's one of the reasons there's tarumis, if the boss pulls out on you. It sounds like from the Gemara, because you have to change the person you're working for, even if you're getting paid the same, and it's the same kind of work, but you have to change the person you're working for, that could be tarumis. So it's really interesting to try to figure out how much these factors are weighed in. So is that whole freedom, the idea to be able to work the same amount, but to decide who you're working for? Or is that not really relevant? So here, the Chikmir Leiv has a suffix about this point, about this issue, that if you're hired for two jobs, and you want to quit for one of them, is that something that you have the right to do, or is that not called freedom, and you only have the right to demand freedom, but not to demand you should be able to work the way you want to work? Another interesting question is the whole language of Pol Yochalachse v'chatzi hayom, the idea that we're emphasizing chatzi hayom, middle of the day. So the middle of the day has a couple of connotations. There's some chiddush in the words chatzi hayom. So what's the chiddush? What's unusual about that idea of chatzi hayom? But what about the chatzi part? What's the chiddush there? Then why is that interesting to us?
I would have thought that the rule would apply to any part, the early or late.
Okay, but presumably it does, right? But the idea of emphasizing the middle of the day. It comes to say some special chus that the worker, you might think, middle of the day, that you can't do. Why? Because the middle of the day is...
Saturday already.
started already. Okay, you started the work. Is there some other chiddush that's included there? What about, does it say anything in terms of how much notice you have to give? Is it talking about that also, about the fact that, whoa, the middle of the day this happened, right? You want to emphasize the middle of the day, you can mean a couple of things that are interesting. Either that just it's an incomplete term of work. It means at least that, right? It certainly means that he doesn't have to be there for any absolute time, that there's some benefit that he has to get out in the middle.
This was after one of the employees.
Oh, so that's the question. So does it mean he doesn't have to warn the employer? He can just quit on a moment's notice. So that is the way some of the Rishonim sound. Tosfos and Ksuvos was also in the Maamar Kamos. Tosfos sounds like that. And it's also the way that the Rambam sounds. But the Chazon Ish thought not that way. The Chazon Ish thought that, you know, we have in general this rule that if it's a davar ha'avud, if there's going to be a loss to the employer, so then the poel can't just pull out. Right, so, and we discussed, that's the right of the Mishnah. Right, the boss is allowed to avail himself of certain remedies if the poel pulls out in a way that causes him a loss. So the Chazon Ish says, having workers constantly working is important to the balabas. So if he's left with nobody covering the station for any amount of time, that's a loss to him. So says the Chazon Ish, it's a chiddush, but that's not a zchus the worker has. The worker doesn't have the right to leave the boss without any workers at any given time. He has to give him enough notice that he can replace him. If he can be replaced, then, and not just replaced at all, but replaced so that there's no lost time. So if he does that, then that's within his chus. But to leave him any time, let's say any significant time, where he's not going to have anybody manning the station, so then, says the Chazon Ish, that's a davar avud already. That's already something that's not in his benefit. So again, that's just interesting because the language of the Gemara, chatzi ayom, which seems to be conveying some chiddush, afilu b'chatzi ayom, even that middle of the day, what's the chiddush in the middle of the day? So maybe you would have thought it extends to this, no notice. You don't have to give your 2 weeks notice to the boss, so you just put down your stuff and leave. So says Chazon Ish, that's not true. What does chatzi ayom mean? It means that he's not obligated to fill out any term that is a normal term of work. It can even be a half day, which is less than anybody's minimal normal term of day, normal term of work. But not that you should read from there that there's no obligation of notice. Another just detailed point, which also is worth illustrating. So we know that we assume this applies to a poel and not to a kabel. Right? So the whole gather is that if you are being paid for your time as opposed to your product, so that's too evid-like. So if I pay somebody to do a job, he's a kabbalan, he doesn't have this special benefit that he has the upper hand. But if I pay him for his time, that's where he has this benefit. He can't have his time sold like an evid. So just to illustrate the point, and this is similar to an issue that came up in our previous discussion, that do we use absolute terminology for defining what's a poel and what's a kabbalan? Or is it really based on the realities, regardless of how you could actually categorize them? So I'll give you two examples in either direction. Both of them are considered by the Chachma Shlomo. The Chachma Shlomo, again, I think I put him on the Maamar Kamos, I remember, but the Chachma Shlomo is Rav Shlomo Kluger, who was the author of the Rav of Brod, and he wrote many volumes of Shilas and Shuvas, the different titles, Ha'elef al-Hashlomo, Shuvan Vidas, he has a couple of different sets of Shilas and Shuvas, and he has a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called the Chachma Shlomo, which is not to be confused with the Maharshal's Chachma Shlomo, which is on the Gemara. The Chachma Shlomo on the Shulchan Aruch is Rav Shlomo Kluger. So he discusses two questions that can go in either direction. One question is, let's say, what would you say about this? So it says, Beferish, in the Ramah that we saw, that one of the examples of a poel is a tutor that you hire who lives in your house, a melamed who's going to be working all the time to teach your children that's there, to teach you, whoever he's teaching. So what if you make this deal with the tutor, that he's got to work 2 hours? 2 hours a day. But they can be whatever 2 hours a day works for him. He's just got a clock. You know, like some contemporary businesses have deals like that. And if you clock in your time, so they're paying you to work for a certain amount of hours, but they're not telling you what the hours have to be. You have to work around your schedule so that it adds up to a certain amount of hours. So is that a pole or a kabbalah? What do you think about that? It's not such an obvious question, right?
Don't you just say pole is usually paid by the hour and
kabbalah? Right. Correct. So how does this fit in?
You have to have a group of a certain number of hours, so that could be seen as a job as a whole.
Well, right. But the emphasis you're saying about a certain number of hours is because once you have a number of hours, it takes up the whole day, so the whole question becomes moot. If we talk about this example, we have 2 hours, and you have whatever hour workday, so then you have some flexibility. If the workday is 8 hours, let's say, and then you say you started to work for 8 hours, then the question's irrelevant. But so let's say the guy makes a deal, he's going to work for 2 hours a day. But he could pick the 2 hours. What would you call that, a pole or a cowboy?
If in the end of the 2 hours he doesn't want to teach him anything, he still gets paid.
Right.
So cowboy's only paid if he completes a job as opposed to the pole, which needs to be there during those 2 hours.
Right, presumably working. That's also something we discussed.
Okay, so even if he's working,
right. But he doesn't have to produce anything. Yeah. But that's interesting. Now you're defining, to use that as the key definition, for this purpose is an interesting decision, because that's focusing on something that's beneficial to him, that he doesn't have to produce any visible result, while a kabbalah has the pressure that he's got to produce a result, and he simply may not have enough hours in the day to produce this result, because it's not going to depend on him working like a dog, it's going to depend on him producing something. So if that's the case, so to focus on that, you're focusing, addressing that component, you're saying a reason why it's better to be a pole than a kabbalah. Pole has it easier because we don't care theoretically if he's actually producing, we only care that he's on the clock. But this whole din is really about a chisaron that's in the pole, that the pole is a little bit slave-like because he sells his time, and a kabbalah has enough mastery over his life that he doesn't have to sell his time, he just has to produce. However he works it out, he's given enough autonomy to figure it out, so that's the advantage of the kabbalah, the autonomy. So here, there's some degree of autonomy. He has to work for 2 hours, but he can choose the 2 hours. It's interesting, it's not an obvious question which way it goes. You want to call that a pole or a kabbalah. But it illustrates, again, where is that difference, and where is it that the pole comes close to being an eved in the way that a kabbalah doesn't. So the Chachma Shlomo thought that was a kabbalah. That even though he's being paid for his time, as opposed to his product. But the fact that he can decide when those 2 hours a day will be, that already is a break from Abdus. He's not considered to be in an Abdus category for that. Now let's go in the other direction for a second. Let's say that he is a kabbalah. He's being paid for his time. I mean, he's being paid for his product, rather, being paid to do something. But we know, when the Balabas knows, the person who's hiring is aware of this, it's a known fact that the job is going to take all of the available time between now and when the boss needs it. There's not a lot of time, and the kabbalah essentially is, for practical purposes, being forced to work all that time in order to have any realistic chance of producing the product. Is that a pole or a kabbalah? What would you think? So Chachma Shlomo thought for this purpose that that was a pole. Says that the Maisa, if a person is pushed into a scenario where he has to commit all of his time, even though that's not the structuring of the deal, but that's the practical reality, that'll make him like a pole. You could argue on both these conclusions. A lot of what the Chachma Shlomo says sometimes is very creative and very subject to a lot of argumentation. We've mentioned him a couple times already in this context, and a lot of what he says is sometimes subject to debate. Sorry? Shilamid Gimel. It's not a list. What it is, it should be on the original list in the Shilamid Gimel Marba Kamos. So, that's an interesting question. Now, we're almost out of time. I'll just introduce one or two other issues. One, Marba Kamos, so again, tomorrow I think we'll end up doing just a lot of practical questions that touched upon a lot, all the themes that we've talked about so far, this one and others. One Maramaka might give you to look at tomorrow, the fascinating Tshuva, the Chavis Yar. It was Kuf Mem, I'll tell you again tomorrow. But in the Tshuva, maybe I'll send Jonathan a link to get it from Hebrew Book, something like that. But the Chavis Yar has some fascinating statements about the impact of Liban Yisrael Avadim, where exactly we see it going or we don't see it going. So just to mention one or two points that sound similar, but they're talking a little bit from different directions. So the daya that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, that you can't commit yourself to working for more than 3 years. So we've discussed a little bit the possible whole duality here between there being an Isser to get involved because of Kli B'nai Yisrael Avadim, but that maybe we can separate the Mominus and the Isser here, somewhat akin to Ribbis, according to those who say there is such a thing. By Ribbis, it's Machlokas also, but we've discussed that that concept exists. But maybe if you contract into Ribbis, you're doing an Avera, but the Choshen Mishpat Shabo still is Chal. So what would you say if you do violate this din? If you assume there is such a din, you can't contract yourself for more than 3 years, and you do it anyway, so is that contract good? So the Ktsos, this also was on the list, the Ktsos discusses this, the Ktsos says it is good. Because he works off the premise that the Isser, as we mentioned yesterday, that Isser is only the Rabbanim. And therefore, he thinks a deal to violate that would be Chal. Now that gets into a whole discussion, which we won't have because it's a big tangent. But we know that normally a Shvuah wouldn't apply if it overcomes the Torah, or if it either supports or goes against the Torah, either way. This is in Yana Diyoma, as we're counting down to Shvuahs. So, they tell the story that the Avnei Nezer, when he was, he keeps getting younger in every story, so let's say he was a fetus, and they used the ultrasound to ask the Avnei Nezer. They said, okay, so when you learn a Hilchus, you want to learn about Hilchus Sukkos, what Gemara are you going to learn? He says, Masechus Sukkah. He says, you're going to want to learn about Hilchus Yom Kippur, and what are you going to learn? He says, Masechus Yom. You want to learn about Pesach, you'll learn Pesachim. What if you want to learn about the halachas of Chag HaShavuos? He says, I'll learn Masech HaShavuos. He said, you silly fetus, you don't know what you're talking about. That Masech HaShavuos is not about the yontif of Chag HaShavuos, it's about oaths, it's part of Nezikin. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the Chag HaShavuos, the festival of weeks. So to that, the unborn Avinezer responded, no, you silly grown-up. It's totally relevant. That the Chag Matan Torah, which we call Chag HaShavuos, the Festival of Weeks, but it is totally about oaths because we believe that the Kabbalah Satorah, in the expression of the Gemara, is Mushpa V'Yomid Meher Sinai, that we have taken upon ourselves by way of an oath the obligation to follow all the rules of the Torah. So you put that together with the principle, the Gemara says that Shavuah is now Chal and a Shavuah. If you take a Shavuah that you're going to go to the baseball game, and then you take another Shavuah later that says you're not going to go to the baseball game, so the second one doesn't take effect because you can't contradict one Shavuah with another one. And if you would take a second Shavuah that says again you will go to the baseball game, and then you don't, you're not Chayiv twice because the second Shavuah is still not Chal. If it supports an original Shavuah or it contradicts an original Shavuah, it's not Chal. No Shavuah takes place on top of another Shavuah. So therefore, since the whole Torah has the status of a Shavuah, if you take a Shavuah that either contradicts or supports the Torah, if you take a Shavuah that says that you're going to eat pork, or you take a Shavuah that says you're going to put on tefillin, either one, neither Shavuah is going to take effect because it's already covered by the Torah's Shavuah. So therefore, what's the story here? If there's a prohibition of Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim, so a person enters into a deal that's going to make him do this. If you believe it's also, it's part of what we discussed yesterday, is there an Isser Shabbat or not? So would that deal be Chal? So the Ksos assumes yes, because he says that that Isser of 3 years is only an Isser Drabbanan. So that opens up a lot of issues. Is it true that you can take a Shavuah against a Din Drabbanan? That's a whole discussion. How exactly does that play into the whole Shavuah Divrei Torah issues? Way out of our scope for now. But also just the question of what does Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim apply to? Is it Nisr? Is it not Nisr? Is this part of the Isr? Is this Nisr Drabbanan? Is this a Shavuah itself? A lot of people argued on the Ksos for that reason. They didn't think that this would rise to the level of a Shavuah anyway. But there's a lot of literature about that. But again, it all goes to the central question of what do we mean when we say ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. Okay, so God willing, tomorrow, like I said, I think we'll try to just deal with a lot of practical points related to what we've seen so far, and move on from this issue. And God willing, so how many weeks of shiur do we have left after today? Wow. All right, we'll have to chazar at some point, but we shall leave at least one more week, right? Before chazar. All right, so God willing, next week we'll do some more new topics, and tomorrow some practical issues. And don't